Hi, today's October 31st, 2021. Happy Halloween for those of you observing me. This is Mobius Podcast, 181. I'm Todd Gossard, my good friend John Westfall. And John and I were just testing to make sure that when I record, my voice actually comes out. Seems like it is. Hope it is.
We figure anyway, that's important.
Yeah.
I mean, we have run one episode, I guess now two episodes without Todd at all.
That's right.
With the Jason Dunn episode. But there was the one legitimate episode where Todd was completely missing from his own podcast.
Yes. That's right. That's right. That was you and Don Cicinelli, as I recall.
Yep.
It was a good podcast.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what episode number that was. It was in the distant past. I guess I'll look through as we're talking and give people a heads up if they want to go back to our back catalog and recall the fond times of hijacking Mobile Views.
Exactly. All righty. Well, happy Halloween to you, John. And, I didn't buy candy this year for the kids last year, I don't think we had any kids come by because, pandemic, right? But even the year before, pre-pandemic, hardly anybody came by. I think everybody grew up and kind of nobody's around anymore. But anyhow, so what do you got, John? You got some notes.
Well, I have a few things from this week. There was not a lot of tech this week when you really thought about it. I mean, there's some new betas of macOS and iOS, but nothing really all that interesting in them except SharePlay showing up in macOS. But a few things. Facebook renamed their parent company to Meta. Do we care about that at all?
You know, only that it's going to – I don't even know it's going to confuse people because Facebook is still going to be Facebook, right? It's the parent company. Change the name soon.
And Zuckerberg's been talking about this Meta concept he's had for years. And so it's sort of like Google's parent company being Alphabet.
Right.
Nobody really caring about it. I think it got a much bigger splash than it should have. The thing that I thought was more interesting is the next item I have, which is that the first images of a Facebook smartwatch have leaked out. We don't really know what the Meta smartwatch would do, is what people are calling it. And my two questions there that I think we could talk about is, one, can Facebook really do anything new in this space? And if they could, would you trust them to do it compared to Google and Apple, which are kind of the dominant forces in smartwatch right now?
Yeah, for all their success, they really haven't had a lot of success with devices. Didn't they have, glasses and a phone and a couple of other things they tried?
Well, more unabashedly than anyone else, I think Facebook and Amazon are the two companies that when they roll out a device, you can really tell that it's just designed to push sales of something, whether it's ad or, I've always gotten that kind of push from the Fire tablets and the Fire phone, if you remember that it wasn't really designed primarily for you, was designed primarily for them and the benefit of them if you had it in your pocket. That's my thing with Facebook watches. It's, what product does Facebook really have that I want on my wrist? And I can think of a lot of products I have on my wrist in terms of my data that Facebook would love to be able to monetize. They're already monetizing me in various ways by just using their platform.
Right.
So a smartwatch, I don't know what they could bring to that. I mean, I already can get Facebook notifications on my existing smartwatch.
Right.
I can interact a little bit with my existing smartwatch with their products. I just don't know.
Well, like you said, John, I think it's not for you. It's for them, right? And so if they get your biometrics, hey, your blood pressure is a little high. Maybe you should buy this blood pressure monitor or, whatever, right? Hey, you haven't been walking as much. Maybe you'd be motivated if you got new walking shoes.
Yeah. Or, what I see is more sort of nefarious than that is not even trying to help me. It's just, hey, this guy, not even the ad so much as using the data and selling it to researchers who are ostensibly just throwing me into a data set that I will never know I'm a part of. So I see it as an interesting idea for them to jump into. You're right. They do not have a great track record with wearables or devices of any kind. But this one, I'm more just shocked that they're trying to launch something, because I'm pretty sure, as we've noticed from the Fitbit, basically there's three players right now that everyone thinks about. You've got this Android Wear ecosystem that's got a bunch of random stuff here and there, Apple Watch and Fitbit.
And Fitbit's owned by Google now.
Yeah, and Fitbit. So how long until the next – I mean, will the next generation of Fitbits roll out with Wear OS and just it'll be a customized Fitbit build of Wear OS?
Boy, that's a good question.
If that's the case, then we'll be down to just two platforms, Wear OS and Watch OS. Which I think, honestly, there might not be a lot more you can do with a wearable at this stage until we get reliable heads-up displays or something like that. You know, smart glasses or contacts with integrated screens or something along those lines.
Yeah.
And the other oddity is, you know, well, when you talk to Apple, they talk about how you're not going to do a lot on your watch. They still think of the watch as a glance, you know, 15-second or less sort of interaction. That doesn't really work for Facebook's user model. They want you interacting with their product as much as possible.
Right. You're not going to endlessly scroll through Instagram on your watch. Well, I guess you could if you've really
It's a pretty sad. Yeah, it's a pretty sad existence if that's all you've got. You don't have another device to do it on in more comfort.
Well, yeah, it'll be interesting. I think they're going. They want to go after biometrics. Maybe they're going to, you know, create a health insurance company, and you know, if you wear their watch, you'll get a discount or something like that. But in fact,
if they give the hardware away, maybe that'll work. But yeah, I don't see them being able to charge for the hardware and all monetize it aggressively.
There you go. Or you know, they'll detect when you're running near a. I guess if Facebook could partner with some, you know, brick and mortar institutions. You know, they could sell you stuff, but at any rate, I'm really keyed on that now that you've mentioned that whole concept, which makes a lot of sense to me. Okay.
Yeah. Next. Well, I guess we'll just have to see what they end up doing with it.
One thing I did want to say about Meta, and this is, I guess, maybe not true for Google. I think Google named their holding company something other than Google because Google had become a verb and, you know, nobody uses Alphabet as a verb, I think. So that was one.
That's true.
When big companies change their name or, you know, create a holding company with a whole new name, usually it's because they've done something really bad and they want to disassociate themselves with the name. But in this case, if the service is still going to be called Facebook, I mean, it's not going to make a difference. It's just a thing. Anyway, next, something I don't know anything about because, well, that's not true. I've been to Chipotle's. I've eaten Chipotle's. I like Chipotle food. We don't have any in Hawaii. Not one.
That's going to make it hard for you to get to it.
Yeah.
Unless you want to swim for a long time to get to the mainland. So this is a piece on MarketWatch, and it talks about Chipotle, and I thought it was interesting because they have some real-world usage from Chipotle. But it's regarding mobile ordering. And they mentioned that Chipotle, McDonald's, those are the two that are really seeing a giant surge. And McDonald's, if you've used any of their mobile order, they've really aggressively pushed mobile ordering lately.
Oh, yeah.
And Chipotle has as well. Ironic that a long time ago, I think McDonald's owned Chipotle for a brief period of time in the 90s and 2000s before it spun off. I'm pretty sure that you'll fact check me on it, but I'm pretty sure that McDonald's had a stake in Chipotle. I don't know why I'm going to fact check myself because you're doing it already. But anyway, the interesting thing about those two is that this whole article talks about how Chipotle is literally overrun mostly with mobile orders. And people probably don't realize that you place your mobile order, you see your screen and you go, okay, well, I should be able to go there in 15 minutes and pick it up. And you don't realize that in that 15-minute time, they've gotten as many as 90 orders in 15 minutes. And usually it's one person or two people on the line making all those orders. And it talked about how last year during the height of the pandemic, you had these fights breaking out in parking lots, people wondering why they couldn't get their orders on time, why they couldn't get things quickly. I remember in-law of mine had gone to Chipotle one night. It took them an hour to get their mobile order. And if you think about it, McDonald's has sort of done the opposite, at least in some markets. So, for example, in my market here, I went there one morning about a year ago and counted how many workers I saw, unique workers inside the restaurant. And in the height of the morning rush, where they were still able to get me my food in what I would consider a normal amount of time, 4 to 6 minutes, I counted 17 unique workers behind the counter that morning.
Wow.
They, you know, McDonald's will staff appropriately in order to maintain fast food and fast mm-hmm. as the verb there. Chipotle, it sounds almost like they're trying to cut corners on everything they can, probably because their ingredients tend to be more premium ingredients, so their ingredient costs are higher there than McDonald's. But it's almost like they're just not seeing this one-to-one combination. If you want people to get their food fast, then you need more people there to make it. And also, I think McDonald's has just a different reality where they are consistently busy more likely throughout the day than Chipotle, whereas Chipotle probably surges during lunch and dinner. Right. McDonald's is sort of a regular level of maintenance. So anyway, the whole reason I bring this up is I think psychologically it's interesting what we think about as fast food. We think about it still as in the 4 to 6 minute time to be ready, when increasingly I've been to fast food restaurants in the last year that have made me wait a half hour in the drive-thru. And I've been to places like McDonald's that are still doing 4 to 6 minutes. It all comes down, I think, to staffing and how much people are actually making use of these mobile ordering and quick ordering platforms.
Yeah, and you know, it's amazing because now that I think about it, you know, I just happened to see like either a Facebook, speaking of Facebook, or Google Photos, you know, memory kind of thing a little while ago, like in August. And it reminded me that I encountered my very first Starbucks mobile order store, in a store that supported mobile orders in San Diego, when I was at a Esri user conference in San Diego in 2015. And so, you know, this whole, at least for Starbucks, the mobile order concept is only 6 years old. But we think of it as like forever. You know, like, has there ever been a time you couldn't?
Well, and I think, you know, really the national chains, when they started doing mobile order, that's what brought it mainstream. Starbucks, I know for a few years there, it was still very much, oh, that's just Starbucks. They're doing mobile order. And as soon as McDonald's and Wendy's and Taco Bell and all of them started to realize mobile order might be a thing, it's now, I think, probably the easier and more influential thing. I noticed that you did find that McDonald's did invest in Chipotle at one time and had a relationship between the two companies.
Yeah, in fact, according to the article I found in a site called WideOpenEats.com, it says that by 2005, so McDonald's did have an investment in Chipotle starting in the like 90s, it looks like, and by 2005 they held 90% of the shares of Chipotle. So like you said, essentially they owned, you know, everything but 10%. And in 2006, they decided to get out of the Chipotle business and sold all its shares back to the Chipotle chain. So because they wanted to focus on their core business. So any rate, it says they also divest in things I never heard of. Donato's Pizza, never heard of that one. Boston Market, I've heard.
Yep.
But
Donato's is regional. We had one in Ohio when I was living there. So it is. It's interesting to look at how these things interacted with each other. But yeah, so I guess the takeaway is the next time you're trying to figure out why is it taking them so long to make my very simple order, it's probably because there's a volume issue that you're not seeing or a staffing hold up. We know that there are staffing shortages nationwide right now in fast food
and everything
that nobody really knows the solution to. Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of surgeons.
But the piece is interesting in Market Watch. It really kind of opens your eyes to thinking about it from different angles, more than just what you've put together for your order on a given day.
Yeah, absolutely.
For me, it really was interesting to just think about why is it that Chipotle is suffering, you know, large cities, Chipotle is suffering. Me in the middle of nowhere, Mississippi, McDonald's can still do things really remarkably fast. And like I said, one morning when I was there, I counted and had 17 different people working, you know, in and around for morning rush. So that tells me that they realize their volume is high enough. They might as well have the right staffing on hand to make sure that they can keep pumping out the orders.
I think my gut instinct is, you know, having not been to Chipotle in years, is that because Chipotle tends to be more customized in terms of your order, that's probably what's taking up time. It's, you know, taking the ridiculously complex order that some people will have and then, you know, actually making it, right? Versus, I think, I'm going to guess even a complex Starbucks drink. And, you know, some people do order ridiculously complex beverages. I still think it's faster than making an actual physical, burrito.
Well, and kind of if you thing. Think about with places like McDonald's, there are only so many variations that people realistically order.
Yes.
So, for example, I have friends who really like getting honey for their chicken nuggets.
Oh, yeah.
Not honey mustard, but actual honey.
Actual honey, yeah.
And every time I have gone and picked up the lunch order for our group, and I've gone in the app and chosen honey as the side I want, every single time I get honey mustard. And I have to go in and say, no, 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 it said honey, not honey mustard. Yeah. And it's just a reflexive thing. They've gotten so fast at it that they don't really have to read because there's not much customization you can do at McDonald's. Yeah.
Well, as long as you don't order one that are ice cream cones, you're okay. Because, the McFlurry.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. I mean, I think you may have read the articles about that whole problem.
Sonic. Yeah, we have a chain Sonic down here that you get better ice cream at. So that's, I think, where most of our individuals go for an ice cream treat.
Yeah, and I have to say, it's sort of amazing how many people do mobile. We have a shopping center near where I live. It's not a very big shopping center, but it's got a Starbucks, a regular Starbucks store in the shopping center. And outside of the shopping center, in the parking lot, there is a separate Starbucks just for drive-through. So you can only mobile order through it. And I've passed by it a couple times. That line is long. I mean, the few times I've passed by, it's not on my normal route, but when I have passed by it, it is like exceedingly long, with cars just lining up, burning up gas, waiting for their Starbucks. It'd probably be cheaper to, park your car somewhere in the early morning, especially when there's a lot of parking, and, just stand in a physical line or go pick it up. But that's just me. and the other thing I've noticed is, I've made a habit on Saturdays on my way when I'm running errands. On Saturdays, I go to the Subway and I order a sandwich or lunch. And the number of mobile orders at Subway is just phenomenal. I'm just and that, like Chipotle, is fairly customized, I guess. People get a little fussy about what's on their sandwich, and there are different kinds of bread and different kinds of cheese and all of that. But I haven't tried their mobile app. The only mobile app I've ever really used is Starbucks, which is fantastic when you think about it. All right.
It really is. And it's kind of scary how good Starbucks can get on that most of the time.
Yeah. And in fact, who did I get? I got the guy who was in charge. When I was a full-time blogger for Think Mobile, we had a conference. We had a Think Mobile conference in New York City. And I got Adam Brotman, who I think is the guy who actually did the Starbucks mobile ordering system. And that was an interesting talk about, how they do things in the app and all that stuff. I wonder if I did a podcast with them. I'll go look it up. I may have done a podcast with either Adam or the Starbucks CIO at the time. Mm-hmm. Well, I think went to Best Buy after that. But anyway. Okay. Next up, a gadget I remember you took me talking about, and I guess you got more stuff about it.
Yeah, so this week, one piece of tech that was announced that got released or got announced is the Aura Ring version 3 or generation 3.
Mm-hmm.
The Aura Ring has some fairly high-profile clients. It was the ring that the NBA famously gave to all of their players to try to understand if they were at risk of, COVID or those sorts of things, because it can detect temperature changes and stuff like that. And I found it interesting. I bought mine, I guess, in June of 2020, and I've worn it pretty much every day. I actually it's the only thing I wear that I get compliments on, which is kind of interesting. nobody compliments my watch, but they'll compliment my ring. But anyway, Gen 3 of their ring came out, was announced this week, same price, $299, which is expensive for a ring, not so expensive for a smart device. It is a titanium ring, mine's held up pretty well for the last year and a half. But like many other fitness wearables, they have decided that they're going to a monthly subscription charge. So for new users, the first 6 months are free. And then after that, you need to pay a monthly subscription around, I think it's $5 a month or so, to access all of your data. Otherwise, you just get three scores, a sleep score, a readiness, and activity score. Nothing deeper. You don't get all the little metrics that go into those scores. The Generation 2 users that would like to upgrade were given an option to upgrade using a either $50 or $75 coupon. Mine was $50. I don't know. I think some people got the $75, probably related to how close they bought their Generation 2 ring. And it comes with lifetime access. So they're basically honoring, thankfully, those that got in early saying, well, we're not gonna convert you over. But it's interesting to me, there's been a lot of debate in the forums on Reddit about the Aura Ring and other places saying, well, I'm goodbye Aura. I'm not going to upgrade. I'm not going to pay your subscription price. I just bought your ring a few months ago. What are you doing with, you know, forcing an upgrade, blah, blah, blah. Which they're not. If you still have the Gen 2 ring, it's going to stay the same way as it is now.
Right.
But this brought up a couple of questions that I thought we could talk through. The first was, is any platform safe from these monthly charges creeping in?
Nope.
You know, it seems like Apple and Google probably will not go that route because, of course, Apple already has some of that if you go with Fitness Plus and a few other of their premium services. But it seems like, I mean, there's that activity tracker from Facebook, not Facebook, but Amazon that requires a monthly charge. There's a few others that require monthly charges. There was another service I was looking at recently that it was a hardware purchase and then a monthly charge. I don't know. These in-app subscriptions are just, they're not that interesting to me anymore. I want to just buy something and get the service.
I hear you. And, you know, Fitbit is of a special interest because Fitbit, I think, always had a premium tier. And after, I've been a Fitbit user since I think 2010, and they've never forced me to go to a premium tier. You know, they'll have little enticements like, hey, try Fitbit premium for, you know, a month or 3 months or free, especially during the height of the pandemic. And I never did because I felt like it gave me, you know, the information I wanted. I think the only thing I can't do is export my info. So maybe what I'll do is subscribe for a little while, export all my info and unsubscribe. But,
Well, it's funny. I have a spreadsheet that I keep all of the subscriptions in that I have. Right. And whether it's by year or month or whatever it might be, I try to at least keep track of these things just for my own sanity. And right now I have, let me see here. If you count everything up, including, and this is also including apps that have a premium tier, like MyFitnessPal has premium tier that I use, and Duolingo and all that, 21 subscriptions. Wow. And it totals, if you break it down on an average per month, $159 a month.
Wow.
And I basically use that as a comparison against cable television.
Yeah.
So I'm still I'm about on par with cable television. If you figure a cable bill anymore is around 120 to 160, depending on what you have. And I also lump in Hulu and Netflix and all of that.
Sure, so I
this
would too.
159 a month category. But the fact that I have to have a spreadsheet in order to do this, and I have to have you know, I treat them mostly like bills. You know, the same spreadsheet also has the bills that I pay each month, things like, you know, electricity and insurance and those sorts of things.
Right.
If you would have told me 5 years ago that I wouldn't be buying apps, I'd be buying these subscriptions. It's just a nasty ecosystem for the consumer.
Yeah, they've really worn us down. Because I remember when Microsoft announced Office 365, now Microsoft 365. I remember thinking, I am never going to pay for that. And here I am, you know, years later. I don't know how many years I've been paying for it. But I do pay for, a, you know, a personal, well, $100 a year, whatever that's called, home edition, whatever. And I've been paying $100 a year without too much complaint for a number of years now. I've gotten not comfortable with the idea, but I've become worn down. So, yeah, I guess I really need it. And I do like, you know, I do like the 1 terabyte of storage in OneDrive and all that kind of stuff. And well, and you know, you convinced me I should, without any sales bingos for yourself, you convinced me I should get Apple One. And so now I'm paying, you know, $30 a month or whatever Apple One costs. And gosh, what else do I have? I also have a really tiny Google One account. I think I paid $20 a year, something like that. It's pretty cheap, whatever it is, to get 100 gigabytes of storage. But yeah, I hear what you're saying. And you know, for those of us who are getting old, I'm pointing at myself here, for those of us getting old and we're going to be on fixed income in not too distant future, It's going to be a pause for thought on like which subscriptions do I keep. I think I've got a half a dozen video streaming services right now, by the way. So, some of those are going to have to go, I think. But well, we'll see. I'll have to start thinking about, what can is really needed versus what was nice to have. Like Hulu, I hardly ever use that. I think I got it because it was Hulu and ESPN Plus was bundled with the Disney account, Disney Plus, when it first came out. So I think that's what I did. But in any case, I think I don't know if they're charging me separately now. I gotta go check because I'm Disney Plus increased. It's only $1, but Disney Plus increased their subscription cost by $1 a month, and I think you can save some of that if you do an annual subscription, which is what I ended up doing. But so at least
The
it's, you don't
other
have to buy. Yeah, go ahead.
well, I was just going to say the other random thing that this got me thinking about is they're limiting if, with Aura, if you don't pay the subscription, you just get the
Yeah.
three scores.
Right.
Most of us that are using this ring want to have all the other scores that it has and all the metrics that it has.
Yeah.
This week, I downloaded the JSON archive of all of my data from them just to play around with it a little bit. And then I realized very quickly, what am I going to do with all this? I've got all these health metrics. I've got health metrics from my ring. I've got health metrics from my watch. I've got health metrics
Right.
from all these other random weird pieces of technology, and
Yeah.
I have no idea what to do with them. I could try to correlate them with mood, or I could try to correlate them with how I'm actually feeling. Surprise, on most days when the ring tells me, "Hey, you're kind of run down this morning. You should take it easy." I'm thinking, "Well, yeah, I already knew that because I didn't get a lot of sleep last night." Or, you're not telling me anything. I'm shocked to find out that I'm run down today. So I guess, you use some of these fitness gadgets too. You've been a longtime Fitbit user. What do you get out of this?
One of the things I especially as I'm getting older, I mean I one of the goals I not a goal I had, but a goal I thought would have been interesting if I had started earlier or Fitbit had been available earlier is to walk 100 million steps. And based on my, and I can't remember, I think I'm at 30 million or something like that, 30 or 40 million steps. And based on my age and the assumption I'm going to slow down in time, it's very sad. I'm never going to hit 100 million steps. It's one of those kind of goals, like you realize you
If
can't
you'll
do.
pay all my expenses, I'll come out there and I'll walk behind you with a cattle prod until you hit 100 million. I mean, if that's what it's going to take, Todd, I'll commit to making sure you get your goal.
The other thing though, the interesting metrics, and you bring up what if Apple starts charging for some of the more interesting but lesser known metrics. So one of the things I've been following lately on my Apple Watch is VO2 max, right? Which is different from blood oxygen percentage, which is SpO2. And the reason why it's my SpO2 is fine, but my blood oxygen, my VO2 max has been decreasing for about 2 years now. I just noticed it a couple of months ago, and I decided to do something about it because I noticed it. And I've been steadily increasing it back up to normal. I'm hoping I can hit normal in a couple of months, based on increased activity and all that sort of thing. But had that been a premium metric, I would have never known. And that'd be kind of bad,
Here's my complaint about Apple's implementation of VO2 max.
Okay.
First of all, I still cannot find the exact equation they use for VO2 max because VO2 max is not supposed to, most of the equations do not take body weight into account, but yet it seems like as I've lost weight, my VO2 max at various times has shot up. And I'm really sure they did some change between iOS 15 and 14 on the VO2 max calculation because I saw a whole point jump when I upgraded from 14 to 15.
That's
But
interesting.
my bigger complaint about it is they have four categories: exceptional, above average, below average, and really bad.
Dead.
There's no normal range. You're either below average or above average on Apple's classifications.
Well, it's like what was Garrison Keillor's town in did you ever listen to Garrison Keillor on public radio?
No.
Oh. Well, all the children are above average in that little town. So, you can't, it's Apple. You can't be average. You're either not, to Apple standards,
You're either
or
below
you're
or
really
above.
good. Yeah. They have a 4-point scale, right? What they teach you in survey research not to do.
Yeah, there's no neutral. You're better or you're worse. Yeah, I find it interesting. I've been tracking my VO2 max as well, and my goal was to get it to the above average range. And then one day when I was about a point below their above average, I started thinking, well, what if Apple's just wrong about their levels? And I found another website, a reputable website that was, you know, giving the classifications. And of course, these are always estimates here and there. But it basically said, oh yeah, your level is within the normal range for your age and all that. And I thought, well, screw you, Apple. I'm normal. Okay, just leave me alone.
Oh boy. The other thing I was going to suggest to you, since you've got a lot more data than I have, at least of data available, is if you have, and you're going to, as a statistics professor, you're going to be horrified about what I'm going to say. But this is for fun, okay? This is not for research. This is just for your own entertainment. If you have something like Microsoft Power BI yes. available, throw all your data into it, and I mean all of it, and just let it go to town with whatever ridiculous theory it comes up with.
Yeah, I have thought about that, and I do think I might do something like that. I do have Power BI in some level that I can access. I also have just thought about running a number of stepwise regressions and just, looking at all the different possible ways to analyze the data just for the heck of it. But that was where I did download the JSON archive for Aura right. this week. And I have an app on my phone that'll export Apple Health to CSV files, so it's a little easier to access.
Oh, did I lose John? So at this point in our podcast at 33 minutes, John dropped. Might be him, might be me. Let me check my network. I'm just keeping on talking.
There we are.
There we are. John's back.
I'm back. Yeah.
I was just noting we had a little technical glitch.
As I mentioned, when I downloaded the JSON archive, I realized that there's missing data in it because, random days that Aura did not code data. So that's where I kind of hit the brakes this week. I started to download it and analyze it, and then I kind of hit that snag and didn't want to figure out how to write some scripts in R to get everything set. But
it's funny you mentioned that, dirty data kind of thing. Well, not dirty data, but missing data in your case. So we, this is a work thing, so I won't mention, too much about it, but we had a third party, a contractor, do a large survey. I mean, thousands of people were surveyed, employees were surveyed about a topic. And I asked for the data. I said, you can sanitize it so there's no personally identifiable information, but I'd like to see the data. And mm-hmm. so they did that. They sanitized it for me. So I can't identify anybody, responding to the question. And they gave it to me. And I said, well, the first thing I want to do before I do any kind of my own personal analysis, mostly for fun, because they have their own team that produced their report and stuff, is I'm going to look at, how clean the data is. I'll start with one thing that is usually a problem. That's location. And the only because mm-hmm. they did scrub it, the only location data I have is zip code. And so I threw it into Power BI and I said, make me a map, show me where mm-hmm. everybody is. And everybody should be in Hawaii. Let me put it that way. Right. Yeah. But I didn't even check how many errors there are, but I have data points up and down the West Coast. I have data points all over Europe. And why? Because if you transpose two digits in a 5-digit zip code, and we only asked for 5, we didn't ask for 9. Instead of Hawaii, you'll get somewhere in Seattle or somewhere in California or whatever. It's a two-digit
transpose the first two digits. That's really going to throw you off.
And then why Europe? Well, it turns out Europe uses their equivalent, the zip code. It's called area code or whatever it's called. It's not an area code. Their version of the zip code, probably called the postal code, is 4 digits. And so if the people who did the survey didn't do a digit check because it was all online. They didn't do a digit check. Mm-hmm. Did this person enter 5 digits, at least 5 digits in the mm-hmm. zip code? They didn't do that. So I've got, probably a couple of dozen, out of thousands. So not too bad, but dozens of European locations. And so, I guess I could go in and clean it up, or I could just do some filtering that says, hey, if this is, If this is the range, just don't give me, you know, location. Don't analyze it as part of location. But yeah, that's the kind of thing I worry about when I see data. Now, presumably all this automated collection is more accurate. But we know that, you and I know that when we look at like GPS data, when we take walks and things, you know, we'll get like GPS echoes and, you know, all of a sudden you have a data point that's like a couple miles away from where you were, and then it'll come right back to where you were and says, oh, that's interesting. I flew there and came back.
Yeah, I find that interesting with, you know, even a product as robust and sane as Google Maps, for example. Yeah. Someone that I know has an old Android phone and they share their location data with me. Mm-hmm. And Google Maps will often put them in the middle of a lake, you know, because they're connecting. Yeah, they're connecting from one thing to another. But yet, you know, you would hope Google would be smart enough to flag that and go, hey, does this person live on an island we don't know about or something like that, that they're in the middle of this body of water?
Right.
Because they don't. It's just that they're connecting to a tower that is in a different location. I'll send you a link offline and you can see what I'm talking about. But it is sort of humorous.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Couple of other things. So just three small items I wanted to note that I thought were kind of interesting. So this person called Robert Heaton, I don't know who this is. I just happened to run across it in Y Combinator's news feed. Noticed that his Wacom tablet was asking him for, you know, approval to do certain things when he installed the driver application for it. And it turned out that it was tracking every name of every application he opened, regardless of whether Wacom used it or not, which is sort of interesting. And I don't know what the meaning of all this is. And I have to, you know, too long didn't read. But it's an interesting article. I have the link there for people who, you know, will read. I'm going to read the whole thing eventually. But it's an interesting little article. Actually, it isn't that long. It's an interesting article. He did some good work on, you know, tracking where the, you know, what they were doing. But he does point out that in some ways it feels unfair to single out Wacom because this isn't a data set that's going to complete the full, you know, he calls it a full totalitarian surveillance capitalism. And, you know, you and I know, we're being tracked all the time by all kinds of stuff we install and some things we don't install, like just going to a website. But it is surprising that Wacom would want to, you know, track this kind of information. I don't know why, but they do. The next thing I wanted to note is Google Resolve. So if you go to dns.google, that's the domain name, Google. If you go to dns.google, you can resolve DNS information based on a site name, which I, you know, it's of limited value for most people, but for geeks like us, it's always kind of interesting to see what the DNS entries are for, the visible DNS entries are for a website. I typed in my own, for example. And the last thing I thought John, or maybe somebody John knows might find interesting, is you go to Learning Music, one word, learningmusic.ableton.com. Now, Ableton is a well-known, very well-known a vendor that produces music software of various kinds. But learningmusic.ableton.com appears to be free. I don't see any. And it's basically lets you make music right on a web browser. You don't have to buy any hardware. You don't have to buy any software. There doesn't appear to be any subscription. It just says, and I didn't try it out, but so far there's nothing in it. It, you know, it says, okay, get started. Check out the boxes below. There's drums, bass, chords, melodies that you can check various things on. And you can make different combinations. Then you can make beats for it and so forth and so on. So for those of you who are not musicians but want to make music, go take a look at it. Price is right. Don't need to buy anything. Mm-hmm. Don't need to buy any hardware. Only need a browser and presumably some kind of audio output. Anyway, that is all
good
I
stuff.
Have. We did it once again, 40 minutes, John. Hopefully we recorded both of us.
Yeah, that will be, we can hope.
We can only hope.
If not, Todd just said, hopefully we both recorded, we got recorded. In case I'm the one that didn't get recorded, Todd felt that was a possibility.
Yeah, and I will try to get off my behind and try to invite one of our old friends to talk about, since next week is November already, well, actually tomorrow's November already. Since November is coming up and the 25th anniversary of Windows CE is here upon us, I'll try to get some of our old friends to to join us again, like Jason Dunn. Again, apologies to Jason Dunn for the weird recording error and some other folks that we've had on the past couple of months as well as next couple of weeks. Okay, John, thanks again, and we'll talk to you later.